Bienvenue and welcome to Akeem's Dream Show. My name is Akeem the Dream, also known as Brown Sugar Supreme, also known as The Dark Knight Batman. I'm Batman. This show is a variety show because I had a lot of ideas growing up and wrote them down, and my curiosity is insatiable. And you'll notice that I have a lot of random ideas and subjects, but I think that's what makes it fun. Variety is the spice of life, and I like to keep it spicy, and you will find that out very quickly. Remember, folks, never grow old with no stories to tell. And it's finally time to spice things up. Let's go.
Check this out.
Ops wanted some initiative. Blew up their entire quadrant. I'm moving like Oppenheimer. She dropped that ass on me from an egregious angle. They thought I was Stephen Wallace. Top shelf Zaza disrupted my circadian rhythm. I have seen the Magna Carta. I've seen the Eye of Horror. I was flipping bricks for Monza Musa before y'all even became a Type 1 civilization.
Took a DNA test. Turns out I'm 100% Himalayan.
That, my friends, is Dracula, otherwise known as Dracula Flow. Look it up on YouTube if you want a good lol. Mitch showed me that shit. I was fucking dying, bro. And that's the first thing we did when we got to Osaka. Got off the high-speed train. Got some lizard meat at the McDonald's. First McDonald's we had in Asia was in Osaka, which is kind of ironic because Osaka is world renowned for how good the food is there. It's even better than Tokyo, in my opinion. Maybe the ramen's a little bit better in Tokyo, but Osaka is Japan's kitchen, if not Asia's kitchen. It's insane. Insane in the membrane. So we go to the McDonald's at the station in Osaka, get some lizard meat. The Godzilla movie had just come out, so they're just pushing that lizard meat hard. It was a lizard meat burger. I'm not sure if it was real beef or lizard meat. I couldn't tell. But I think that's once Mitch got that taste of lizard meat in his mouth, he just couldn't resist but go and get some more lizard meat. And I'll allude to that story later. But yeah, man, we're in Osaka. It's a chill vibe. It's a more chill vibe than Tokyo. Tokyo is like hustle and bustle, right? Rat race, that kind of vibe. 40 million people in one city. There's no way you can be chilling, right? You always got to be on your P's and Q's and looking out for the ops before you have to blow up their whole quadrant, as Dracula would say. So we get to Osaka. The first thing we do is go to the Duttonbury district. And this is like the main area of shopping. So there's still 17 million people or something like that in Osaka. And you can tell. As soon as you get to this Duttonbury district, there's this famous bridge with this like cleaning man guy who's doing this like hands in the air gesture. He's standing up and looking at it. I think it's like a cleaning company from the 20s or 30s or something like that. You see that guy, you see the lights, the glitter, the glam, and it's just a massive amount of people. Like there's this huge corridor, like indoor walking mall, like boulevard. And it goes on for like 2 or 3 kilometers straight with just shopping and different kind of stores and stuff. And it just goes on forever. When you're standing on this bridge in the Duttonbury district, you just walk down and all you see is people. You just see heads. I've never seen so many people. I thought I saw a lot of people at the Shibuya crossing in Tokyo. That it felt like there was more people here than at the Shibuya crossing. And you might think to yourself, Akeem, wouldn't that make it less chill? Well, it would if it wasn't like for the fact that everyone in this town is just like kind of focused on just going shopping and eating. Where in Tokyo, you know, you got a mix of people going to work, people walking around, people going to eat. It's more kind of commercial, whereas this is like more food service oriented, I would say, like more restaurants and stuff like that. The big attractions in Osaka are the Osaka Castle, Universal Studios, and then I think they have a few other tours and stuff like that, but we didn't do any of that. We focused the whole time on going to get food. And we did have some American food, right? We had McDonald's. We also had Shake Shack. First time, I think it was the first time for Mitch that he ever had Shake Shack. It's a New York burger-based company. Oh my God, these burgers are insane. Like you can just bite into them and you don't have to chew them. I don't even feel like I chew the Shake Shack burgers. I just ingest them, but they're delicious. I have a few pictures of me looking it down at these burgers, like my newborn burger baby. The first street food we tried when we were walking around in Osaka was takoyaki, which is just like a fried dough with squid meat in the middle of it. And then they put some like kind of like sauce on top. And the videos we had seen on YouTube in preparation for this trip got us pretty excited for this specific kind of street food. And I'm not going to lie, it was kind of underwhelming. The first ones we had in the Duttonbury Street or the Duttonbury District was a little bit, they made it too fast. It was too doughy. It was like hot, uncooked dough, with squid in it. And it tasted good because of the sauce, but it was a bit of a letdown. I was like, if this is what all the hype was about, I don't get it. So the first day we're there, Mitch was like, yo, Keem, we got this place we got to go check out. It's these cabbage pancakes called Okonomiyaki. Okonomiyaki. Say that 5 times fast. But essentially what it is just like they get a bowl. They mix in. It's kind of like they're making a pancake, but they throw in cabbage, like flour, dough, egg. Like they're making like a cake, but then they throw in meat. Right? So they make this concoction, like this batter with all this like very hearty, savory items in it. You could put bacon in it. You could put whatever squid in it, beef. I normally did pork or beef, but they make this and then they cook it on the stove and it takes probably 5-10 minutes to cook. And then they flip it and they add their sauces to it. And oh my God, it is so, so, so good. I mean, when I had this meal, it took us a while to get there. It took us like a 20 minute walk. By the time we got there and had the first one, I was like, what is this? Because it was insane. And the guy, he greeted us after we finished eating and we thanked him. And he's like, where are you from? And what part of Canada and all this stuff. He was very gracious and he was a master. And it made me realize that like just because somebody has a shop in Japan doesn't mean that they're taking it seriously as a craft. Like there's restaurateurs and then there's craftsmen. And the guy we ate this Okonomiyaki from was a craftsman. Like he was like diligent. He had the measurements. It would look like every single Okonomiyaki cake looked the exact same. And the fresh ingredients, it was legit. Like it was just it was just insane. And I actually watched him make a few of them. And he was just like, you could tell like he was just immersed in it 100%. Like it was something that he just loved doing. After that, we went to this like 7-story building where they just have like floor after floor of like arcade and sports and shooting ranges and different kinds of games like that. Like the Japanese love arcade. They love playing games. So it's similar to like Playdium. If you remember Playdium back in the day, or I guess the modern day thing would be like the Rec Room in Edmonton or Greta in Edmonton, where you just go there and play games. It's like that, but like 7 floors of it. And then they have like 1 floor is dedicated to archery and basketball, and the other floor is dedicated to like skating. You can play like different video games and arcade games. So we got like a flat rate for 3 hours and just balled out. And they were playing basketball one of the floors, so we decided to go in there and I was going to challenge them, but Mitch is like, you know, don't come here and you know, embarrass the locals by dunking on them and stuff. But oh, it was so fun. It was only 8.5-foot high hoop and we were just dunking on it and, you know, drinking Dr. Peppers, having a great time. We went to this little like a BB gun shooting range. And by the way, in some places in Asia, like in Bangkok, they actually have these shooting range, these BB gun things on the side of the street. But they had it inside this place, and Mitch like took this like, it was like a rifle that just shot BB guns, pellets. And there's like a target, like a bunch of targets downrange, maybe 30, 40 yards. And Mitch hit every target in a row. It blew my mind. I went and shot. I'm a horrible shot, apparently. Or maybe I just don't know how to hold a gun properly, or maybe all of the above. I only hit like 2 out of like 20. He hit 20 in a row. I was like, bro, you're on fire, man. And then he won at darts. The only thing I won at the whole day was like this monster truck game where you just like, you're in a tank and you're just blowing shit up. I was pretty good at that. But and a few racing games. But everything else, like Mitch is like a master gamer. And he was also playing this game where you have to fish and you have to keep feeding it with coins. There's these other things where like, I'm not sure what the point of the game is, but you just keep feeding it coins and hitting these levers. And it's like fake money. It's a fake currency inside this like studio. But the people are sitting in there for hours and hours and hours and hours. It's probably the North American equivalent of just like rolling the slots. Like the one time I went to the River Cree on the west side of Edmonton and I went to the smoking area. And there was just these old ladies like 50s and 60s just ripping darts and just pulling on that lever fucking all night long, right? And it's just the sounds like all the sounds, the lights are pumping oxygen in there. They're ripping darts. They're never going to leave that place, right? And that's what it's like in Japan in some of these places. Like they have these arcades where you're putting in little silver balls or you're putting in coins and you're playing Mario or you're playing whatever game. And some of these people look like they haven't blinked in a few hours. And the only thing that they get up to go and do is rip darts. And they don't have to even, this place is so smart and they're so accommodating. They'll do the same things they do in the casinos, but they'll do a private room because they don't want to smoke inside the arcade area. They'll make these little cubbies, like these indoor vestibule cubbies, where you can just walk inside and rip darts. So you're walking around, obviously you see this like phone booth with people smoking inside. They smoke a few darts, and then they leave, come back out, and keep playing the game. So it's a different vibe, man. It's really cool. I could just sit there and people watch all day, and that's what I like doing. Like, I think they even had those smoking rooms in the Don Quixote's. Like, people just rip darts, right? At least that's something everyone in the world has in common. They have their dart rippers. So we were only in Osaka originally for 2, maybe 3 days. We found this really cool hostel, and in like this like kind of hipster part of town where the burger place was. And we found met some friends the first night. Actually, there was a girl I was talking to there one night, and we just invited her over to our table, started chatting her up. And I thought things were going pretty good. I was like, oh, this, you know, who knows where this could go, right? And just flirting with her and stuff. Next thing you know, we're sitting at the table. Mitch and I are just drinking a beer with her, just like, you know, talking about our travels. And this guy out of nowhere from South Korea just stands up, looks, makes eyes with her. And we could tell right away, this guy's kind of a little bit off, like there's something going on. And every time he made a statement, he would just like awkwardly smile, like the Joker from the Batman, and just like look at us and be like, in the middle of his sentences, be like, yeah, so I'm just here from Japan, from Seoul. And just imagine somebody smiling awkwardly and then continue the sentence. So yeah, I'm in Japan and I'm having a good time. Smiles again. And we're like, uh-oh, we got a stage one awkward man here. So we're accommodating, like, hey, yeah, don't you just invite yourself over, bro, and take a seat and start talking to this chick we're talking to. And he's focused on her, but he's so weird and strange that it was just like, we're just chilling. Like, I don't care if we ever talk to these people again, but like, I don't want to be rude and put talking to this girl or trying to game this girl or whatever, like flirt with her, above just being a cool guy, right? So when you're traveling, you meet people and you just want to be inviting. So even though this guy was weird and he approached us without really, like, he just kind of came in like and just invited himself over. And even though I wouldn't be normally cool with that, I'm like, you know what, we're traveling, whatever, just be chill. So we invite this guy over. He starts just taking over the conversation and leading it to wherever he wants it to go. And he's super strange and super awkward. And then finally Mitch is like texting me. He's like, bro, let's get this guy out of here, or let's get out of here. Let's bail. And then we concocted some like plan to leave and made an excuse. And then we just started like talk. We went to our floor and just kept drinking with her and went to 7-Eleven, got some drinks. And that was the first night I kind of got really drunk. I don't think I got really drunk in Tokyo. This is the first night I got kind of drunk. Didn't get like hangover drunk, but I was feeling it a bit. You know, I was like, whoa, we boozed a lot that night. And the lady, she was from like Utah or something, and an arborist, and she was like in school or something like that. But she came to Japan to ski. So apparently there's a huge part of tourism in Japan where people don't even come to the big cities. They just go up north, like to Sapporo or wherever, and take in the skiing. So apparently there's like, it's not Whistler levels or Banff levels or the Alps in Switzerland or something like that, but it's definitely nice. I've seen some videos and I saw some of her stories after on Instagram. I'm like, holy shit, the skiing looks awesome. The next day, essentially, we're leaving to Vietnam. We're only in Osaka for like 2 nights. We were supposed to be. And then what ends up happening is, you know, when you go to Vietnam, it's the only place in Asia we needed a visa because it's a communist country, all that stuff, right? Maybe not because of that, but they have a different immigration policy. So whatever, we applied for our visas like a month before we left, and it took like 2 weeks for them to confirm, and then it took another 2 weeks to confirm another few things about our names and stuff. Either way, like when I applied for my visa for Vietnam, they asked for me to change or update my name like 3 or 4 times. And I thought I entered it right the first time. But by the time they confirmed it, it was like 2 days before the trip. So I was so excited about the trip. Once they confirmed it, I didn't even double check. I just was like, hey, let's go on this trip. My mistake, right? I should have double checked, even though if I was to change it, I would have been like in the kind of gray zone of being on this trip, not having a laptop, and just trusting that the last edit I made was good. So I didn't check it. We left on the flight the next day to Japan. And by the time we're going to Vietnam, I didn't even realize that there was a huge error on my application to get into the country. So we go to the Osaka airport. We're checking into the Vietnam Airlines, and Mitch gets his thing checked. He's getting his ticket. Next thing you know, they're looking at mine. They're looking at mine. They're looking at mine. They're not really looking at me in the eyes. And they're like, Akeem, is this your passport does not match your application, your visa. It says Akeem Robert Brown Akeem. And we're like, fuck, you got to be kidding me, man. I was so, so devastated, so choked. And we tried to negotiate. We tried to ask, like, how could we remedy this? You know, honestly, what the crazy thing is, that piece of paper that I used against the country, if I had just whited out Akeem at the end before we got to the airport, probably would have gone to the country, no problem. But that extra name stopped me from getting into the country. And I was devastated. And Mitch was, you know, to Mitch's credit, like he was like, Akeem. And I was like, Mitch, if you want, you're allowed to go to Vietnam. Like your paperwork's fine. You did it right. And to Mitch's credit, he's like, you know what, Akeem, we went on this trip together. We're going to stay together. And I'm very thankful to him for that because, you know, if I was to stay on my own in Japan, I would have had to, you know, it would have changed. It would have completely changed the trip overnight. Right. So, you know, Mitch was like, you know what, I'll forego going to Vietnam. We'll just stay here a few more days and reapply for your visa and we'll try to figure it out. So I was, gave him a hug and we figured it out. We left the airport, went back to, I booked another few nights in Osaka and we were enjoying Osaka. So it was like, whatever. And there's worse places to be stuck at besides the coolest place to eat in Japan, in my opinion. It was a blessing in disguise because we hadn't tried Wagyu beef yet. We hadn't really done a lot of the cool stuff in Osaka that you can really do as far as like partying and meeting locals and all that kind of stuff. So it was kind of a cool opportunity in disguise. And Mitch really helped me change my attitude about it because I was choked for about a day. I was really, really upset. And the thing that was weird too was if you talk to anybody, like even the Japanese, if it was a Japanese airline, and this is not a commentary about like countries, it's just a commentary about customer service and maybe cultures, but the Japanese customer service attitude is way different than the Vietnamese. Like the Vietnamese customer service attitude is, oh, it's wrong, fuck off, don't come back. And we're like, what? Like, has this ever happened in the history of trying to get to Vietnam? Like, where should we go? Who should we talk to? Is there a way we can expedite this or just like look past it? And they were like absolutely so unhelpful. It was like it was kind of a sign of things to come too. It was just a weird vibe. And I've never been to Vietnam and I definitely want to go. I plan to go one day and just make sure I double check the visa. But the getting into the country was very confrontational and it didn't need to be that way. Like I made a mistake, yes. But did they need to be assholes about it? No. Like they just told us to leave, right? It was very unprofessional and not very customer service oriented. We actually tried to go to the Vietnamese embassy and go through their process. And they just said, no, you have to reapply. So we reapply at the hotel and we're like, hey, let's just try to have fun while we're here. So we stayed at a hotel and I actually ended up getting my hair cut by a Japanese lady. And she was telling me about how she wants to go to Banff and she wants to move to Canada. And it was cool. It made me in a better mood. We started planning out the rest of our trip in Osaka, right? So we went, Mitch was able to figure out this whole system with Hostel World, which is what we were using to book the first few nights in Japan, where they have this whole interface, a social networking component to this app where you can go in there on Hostel World and see who's all at the hostel and reach out to them and make plans and stuff. And Mitch was able to like coordinate like 15 or 20 people to go out and party with us. So we met all these cool people, man. Like there's this guy from Alaska named James, and he's like, he's essentially a vagabond now, a nomadic traveler. Like he sold his business and he sold his car and he's now just traveling the world. And he went out with us and there was a lady that's studying in London that's from like, I think she's from Norway. There's another guy from Norway. And I could be getting their locations wrong, but I met so many people on this trip, it's hard to remember everybody. But either way, like, you know, we meet in the lobby at our hostel. Or no, we went for dinner first and then we went to karaoke. We went to get some more onoyokinami and then we go to get some drinks. Then we go to do karaoke. And at the karaoke bar, it was lit. Everybody in Asia seems to love karaoke. He seems to love singing. And I love it. And I was embracing it. And Mitch is a great karaoke singer. So, you know, we were just getting the vibe set and that just kind of got everyone in the right mood to go out and party. So we're just out there drinking, having a great time. And this was the drunkest. This was the night I got the drunkest in the whole trip. The whole 2 months, I didn't get as drunk as I did this night. This was, by the time we were done karaoke, I was already 8 or 9 drinks deep. And I normally don't do that, but I just got carried away, right? We're partying. And maybe I was a little bit like using the alcohol to numb my Vietnamese rejection. But either way, it got really slippery really quick, right? So we leave the karaoke place drunk and there's like 7 or 8 of us walking around Osaka. And then we go to this club. It was like an actual like club. They had like pool tables and people were doing Jenga and it was kind of like half Japanese, half expats. And that's where I did the thing we did the most damage. Like we probably drank like 4 or 5 of these mixed drinks. playing Super Mario and having a great time. After that, like, I didn't black out, but like, I don't remember as much as the rest of the night. All I do remember is we're at the last club, and somehow Mitch and I were able to coordinate and find each other. We walked home at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and we were pretty drunk. So we get home, and the next day's a write-off, right? We just completely lost a full day there in Osaka, and didn't work out that way, so it just sucked. But we had our Pocari sweats and brought us back to life. But Mitch met a cool guy that night. We went out the first night we were partying with everybody. This guy named Bruce, who was staying at our hostel, and really cool guy. He's got Japanese heritage, but he lived and worked in the States, and now he's like back in Japan traveling and stuff like that. So him and Mitch hit it off, and I didn't really know who he was. He was like this like mystery figure that I didn't really talk to that night, but Mitch really connected with him. And later on, I realized he's just a really awesome, sweet dude. And I was like, man, this guy's awesome. But that night that we were really drunk, Mitch went out with Bruce to get some lizard meat. And lizard meat was the ongoing joke. I was like, bro, he's eating eels, right? And eels are lizards. I don't care what anyone tells me. Like, they're lizards. They're lizards from the sea. They're sea lizards, okay? So I knew this was a sign of things to come, the way he scarfed down his lizard meat McDonald's at the Osaka train station. I was like, if he's enjoying this fake lizard meat, wait till he gets real lizard meat up in him. He's going to be loving it. So him and Bruce went to go get some of that lizard stuff and up in them. And I went to get a traditional burger, where I met this expat guy from Chicago. And he's like, Akeem, you need to, or no, he's not, he didn't know my name, but he essentially tipped me off about like a few places to get the real Wagyu beef, because Mitch and I had been like hinting at this, like, hey, let's go get some actual authentic Wagyu, right? And Wagyu is just essentially like the high-end quality beef. I think it rivals Alberta beef. Some people would say it's better than Alberta beef, but you know, that's blasphemy. If Alberta beef is a religion, you cannot go against the prophet of our cows. Like, our cows are sacred, sacred cows, AAA Alberta beef. But anyways, Wagyu beef from like Kobe and Kyoto or wherever, it is high quality meat. So we've been dreaming about doing this, and we're like, we came this far. It'd be a shame if we didn't do the true Wagyu beef experience at some restaurant. The only thing is, every food stall in Osaka, everybody who sells like street meat claims to sell the real Wagyu beef. So they're tripping, right? Like, there's no way this is legitimate Wagyu beef, but they have the picture and then they have the meat right there, and it's all marbleized. So it's kind of hard to tell the difference, because just because it's marbleized doesn't mean it's like legit authentic Wagyu beef, right? So we're a little bit sus about that. We don't really pull the trigger on any beef on the street, because we're like, we want the real experience. We don't want any washed or watered down Wagyu beef while we're in Japan. But this guy at the burger restaurant that I went to by myself, I was asking him about it, and he was he met a Japanese lady like 15 or 20 years ago and moved to Japan, and now he runs his burger shack. But he's an expat who's also a local. So it was really easy to talk to him, because he knows some Japanese, he knows the Japanese culture, he lives here, but he's also an American. So he's got like, he knows how to like kind of communicate with me in a way that I understand, where I'm like, hey, where can we get the authentic Japanese Wagyu beef? And he doesn't even like hesitate, and he's like, go to this place. It's like, I think it's called M5 or M15 or something like that. There's only two or three of them in Osaka. And as soon as I found that information, I shared it with Mitch. I'm like, we need to go here. And we lined it up. Bruce came along as well. And that's where I kind of got to know Bruce a little bit. And I was like, okay, yeah, this guy's dope. And we had this 7-course meal, bro. The beef at this place, just kill yourself. Like, it's insane. Like, you don't even have to do anything after this. You can just, unless you want to have kids, like, there's nothing else to live for. The beef literally melts in your mouth. It's insane. And they just keep bringing it out. Like, they get actual horseradish and shave it right in front of you to make the paste. They dip everything, or sorry, some of the meat gets dipped in this like sauce, and then an orgasmic experience, like sweet nectar from the nipple of Aphrodite. It's like one of Aphrodite's butt cheeks being shaved off and dipped in butter, glazed from the heavens, and then sauteed onto your mouth. Like, you don't know what to do with yourself. Like, they make you sit on these like little floor pads, so you're like at the floor level, because they actually carve out a hole into the floor so you can sit at the level of the floor. So it's kind of hard to explain, but the table's at floor level and the seats are below the table. So it's, you're like at on the ground effectively, and they just bring out food to you and they talk to you and they get to know you. worth it. It was like $90 each, I think. Yeah, we paid probably $250 or something, or $300, but it was worth every bite. Totally recommend going there. And if you do go there, I'll look up the restaurant if you really want to know what this place was, but it's insane. So we do that. And then the last day we were there, we went to, we did a bit of a food tour. Actually, no, we did it the same day we went to the Wagyu place. So when I was coming to Asia for some preparation, I watched these shows on Netflix called Street Food Asia. They went to Osaka, they went to Bangkok, they went to Cebu, they went to a few other places, Singapore. And I've been watching these places because they highlight three or four restaurants in each episode for each city. And one of the restaurants that they highlighted, or two of the restaurants that they highlighted, we went to when we were in Osaka. One's called Izakaya Toyo. And it's effectively this guy who's like 70 years old, who's been running this izakaya shop, which is just like, you know, fresh meats and sushi and stuff. He's been running this street food vendor since 1991, since I've been born, 32 years. But he started it off. Go watch it for yourself. Go check it out. But he's hilarious. So he's essentially a showman. He's taking a part of the sushi you can't eat raw, so he has to cook it, and he starts using a flamethrower. And this flamethrower is massive. Like, it should be used for welders. It should be used. He uses it to light a cigarette. He's flaming up the tuna, and then he dips his hand in ice water and just sorbets it. He's a showman, but the food is delicious. Like, I think my favorite thing was raw tuna sushi. Oh my God, insane. Was so good. The cooked sushi was okay. The cooked tuna was okay, but I really just like the raw sushi he made. Just unbelievably delicious. And it was outside, so everyone's got this steel table, and then you go, the people come by and place orders. But the thing that stood out about him was, is really influencing me now, is, and he said, it's better to be the head of a chicken than the tail of a bull. And what he means by that is, in Japan, depending on what your goals are, sometimes it doesn't make sense to join a big corporation and be a pawn in the business. Sometimes it's better to be a small business owner or to run your own thing. And although you will never make maybe as much money, or you won't be in a big business, at least you're the head of it, right? At least you're running it. At least you have some autonomy and control. And it kind of relates me back to this book that Mitch was telling me about, where the theme or the premise of the book was, if you don't make or plan your own life, somebody's got a plan ready for you. So I really was inspired by that, right? It's better to be the head of a chicken than the tail of a bull. Better to run your own shop than to be just mixed into some big organizational chart and be disposable, right? So it took him 30 years, but now he is the head of a bull, I would say. Like, he's got a huge business there where there was a lineup. Like, we had to wait probably 20, 30 minutes for our food, and it was a cold day, right? It was windy. It was like around 0 degrees. Everyone was like dressed up and like shivering, but people were waiting because it's a show now. Like, he has made it. He's successful, right? So, you know, if you are successful as the head of a chicken, you can become the head of a bull. But it's very hard to go from the tail of the bull to the head of the bull. It's easier to go from the head of the chicken to the head of the bull. Anyways, that's a long way of saying good street food in Osaka. And if you're in Osaka, go to Izakaya Toyo. We also went to a real takoyaki place, which was the balls of squid balls that I was talking about before. But anyways, if you look up actual like takoyaki places on Google and Google Maps in Osaka, you'll find really good ones. Just look at the ratings, because the ones on the street in the Duttonbury district is not very well high quality, in my opinion. You actually have to go search it out. But if you go find the real stuff, it's really good. And it's cheap too. It's like, I think we had paid $3 or $4 for like 16 or 24 balls of this stuff. It's really tasty. And they actually cook it through, so it's not super doughy. This place was different, right? It was a cool. Osaka is a different vibe. Very delicious food, right? And they got those girls standing on the street. Not as much as in Tokyo, but they do have these like maid cafes where girls are standing on the sidewalk with like these menus. And you go in there and effectively you just spend like triple the amount that you would on a normal drink for a beer in there. But what they do in there is these girls dressed up like anime characters just dance around you and make you feel like $1 million. We never did it, but I heard it was funny. You see them all over the place. The third day we were there, after we got rejected at the airport, I was like, Mitch, let's just go to Thailand. Because Mitch at the airport was like, bro, worst case scenario, we don't go to Vietnam and we go to Thailand. Because as soon as we got back from the airport, when we got rejected, I reapplied to the Vietnamese government to get the visa confirmed. And the crazy thing was, when I applied for the visa to go back to Vietnam and do it correctly, I didn't get a response, and I still haven't got a response to this day. But I paid the $25. Like, they charge you $25, and normally you'd get a response, right? But they just robbed me. They're like, you know what? You've already tried. You're a red flag to the country for some reason, and you're just not allowed back. So I didn't even try to get a refund. I was like, you know what? Whatever. So I booked a flight for Mitch and I to go from Osaka to Bangkok with a 2-hour layover in Hanoi, Vietnam, with the off chance that maybe we maybe land and maybe my visa will have been granted, which would have been like 4 or 5 days later after first trying. Normally the application takes 2 days, but we waited 4 or 5 days. And my hope was by the time we landed in Hanoi on the 5th day, I would have gotten an approved visa. And then we would have been able to be lucky and just go into the country. We landed in Hanoi, didn't get an email, and I tried to talk to somebody in the immigration. They didn't even look at us. It was really strange. But I'll go into that in the next episode, because we ended up going to Thailand after that, which is what the next episode will be. Bangkok and Bangkok. Do you know what I'm saying? Aye. Peace.